y'all. You just don't understand how much I love y'all. Thank you. So number one, you know, thank you guys for coming out. This is the first time we've done this live. This is the second time we've done it ever. The first time was with my brother Fonte from Little Brother and Foreign Exchange. And by no means is this going to be, the conversation is going to be all about music. It's just that music is a part of the culture. Music is a part of creativity. And I just have some, can I cuss?
Yes.
I'm trying to refrain, but conversations is like that. Like, I got some cool ass friends like this dude who doesn't realize when nighttime starts. It doesn't start at 12 o'clock. It does not start that early. If you recognize the voice, you know, you've probably heard Gorillaz, Feel Good Inc. You've heard that laugh. Like, this dude has one of the most unique laughs I have ever heard. I first heard it when we were, man, had the art of the turntables, Pete Rock, and we were backstage and this cat was back there, and that was the first thing I heard. And we were just back there clowning, and then we reconnected today. You've probably heard the song Me, Myself, and I. Right? A lot of people don't know that this cat is the one that did that. You did that, right? You did that. You did that. Yo, make some noise. And you probably, yo, why are both of our phones ringing right now? At the same time.
Guess who that is?
Who is that?
That's David DMX.
See, this is what keeps happening. He keeps getting these legends calling him on the phone like it's nothing. Bumpy Knuckles was earlier. I'm like, what are you doing? You've heard Buddy. Some of you have heard the music version of it, Music Soul Child. Some of you have heard the version by De La Soul. And you have heard of De La Soul.
Yes, sir.
Plug one. Plug two. And I would like to introduce to you guys and thank, I want to say thank you to Plug 3, Maceo. Thank you.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you for coming out and supporting what's going on this evening. Peace and love.
Yo, how you get so much bass in your mic?
I just woke up.
Hold on. No talk like that. Yo, that's sexy.
Good evening. Should I do the whole thing like this?
Yo, that's how I used to pick up the phone as a kid. People call, like, is Tobias there?
Yes.
I only did it for the girls. That was before we had, like, I'm gonna date myself. This was before you had what is it called? The caller ID. So you pick up the phone.
Hello.
Baby, what you doing? Sorry, Grandma. I'm so sorry. I was only 11 and I had that kind of voice. It was weird. But so we're here to ask questions, right? So Maceo has done a lot. De La Soul has been through a lot. You know, and the anonymous nobody. That album came out, what was it, 2 years ago?
Yeah, two and a half.
2.5 years ago. I still listen to this album. Musically, it did something that I hadn't really heard from a hip-hop, quote-unquote hip-hop album. You bended genres. You know, you guys did crowdfunding in order to do whatever it was that you guys wanted to do. Creatively, this was something different. You and I in the car earlier, we talked a little bit about creativity. We talked a bit about where it comes from, and we even talked about this album. But what was it that made you all decide to go in that direction? Was that something that came from the soul? Was it of the soul? Or was this something that, as you got into music, it organically happened? I mean, you guys had, you know, there's a little bit of rock, a little alternative, a little funk, hip hop. There were songs where you wouldn't hear rapping until the end. The song structure was completely different. What made you guys decide to go in that direction?
Overall, I mean, the soul is always in every album, you know? Especially at that particular time and stage in our lives. But why we decided to go in this direction, one reason was because in the past, our career has been predicated on sampling. We have developed some sampling issues, legal issues in the past behind sampling. And then also being out of the business, well, technically out of the business for like 12 years, not making a record, industry taking a complete turn, the value has completely dropped. Deals weren't the normal deals we were conditioned to. So it was a number of things that led us to that crowdfunding, especially based on what we had been conditioned to after the second album.
That was the second.
More so after the second. You know, type of budgets that we were conditioned to make the type of record we like to make, especially with our sampling being a big part of our creative, you know, knack.
Yeah.
So this record was to try to avoid that. We figured we worked with, well, we were working with a band for about 3 years prior to making that record, a band called Rhythm Roots All-Stars.
Oh, that was,
yeah.
You told me this earlier and it's just hitting, I know, okay, yeah.
About 13 guys from Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And we developed a great chemistry with them. We had we had toured with them for about a good 5 years. Mm-hmm. But 3 years prior to the album is when we started recording music with them. We recorded maybe like, I want to say like 200 hours worth of music.
Okay, wait.
Jam sessions. Just jam sessions.
You got that with you? You got that?
Sorry?
Those 200 hours, I need that.
Do I?
I need those 200 hours. I'm not going to sell it. I just need it from me.
Reason. We still plucking ideas from those 200
okay,
hours.
All right.
You know, that's just, you know, thinking back in those times when music was really being created from an organic place of everybody being in the room together, either humming a melody or the band just having a jam session, thinking of those times of, you know, Parliament Funkadelic or Ohio Players and how they really came up with that magic. Is behind everybody truly being in the room together, developing from a conversation onto the jam session to whatever this magic is going to turn into.
Dope.
I mean, over the last 15 plus years, I believe everyone has been making records with no real soul in it. People have been sending files back and forth. If you really know the science behind making music, you can really tell when people haven't been in the room together, that everybody figured out the mathematical, scientific way just to deliver a song, but it doesn't really have the soul in it. It doesn't have that, you can tell there's no connection, you know?
That's something that I talk to people about, you know, when people ask about the creative process and, you know, I think part of what makes creativity great and when it really works is when you have someone in the room to say no. When you have someone in the room that has a different perspective and when they hear it, they're just like, yo, why don't we do it like this instead of like that? And what I'm noticing the same thing. You hear music and maybe it's just me, you know, and I used to do music. When I hear their vocals, it sounds like they were recorded in different places. You know, you didn't have this person write his rhyme in the same room with this other person.
Yeah.
You know, that was one of the things I liked about Wu-Tang. You know, they were all battling to get on the song.
Pretty much.
You know?
It was always some kind of friendly competition.
Exactly.
To make the song great. I mean, that's what it always had been with us, let alone the native tongue in general. When we were all in the studio together, from us, Jungle, Tribe, Latifah, Black Sheep, even from Brand Nubians to Diamond D. I mean, it was a friendly competition to, one, make sure that we all made each other better.
Right.
You know, it was just a different era in time, you know? I think we strive to really make good music as opposed to trying to make hit records. You know, hit records is only for the moment, classics are forever.
Yeah.
So, you know, getting those lessons early on, especially from people who came before us, like a Biz Markie, Dougie Fresh, Chuck D, Stetsasonic, you know. It was just so much that came before us that was a lot of great lessons early on. And here it is, we even came in a time where you didn't even expect it to be what it is today.
Right.
You know, it was a childhood dream coming true, something that was totally defiant.
Like, you know, how you threw that in there.
My mother did not want me doing this, you know. But although she's proud, you know what I mean?
Right, right. You touched on something. I know there are a lot of De La Soul fans in here, but some of you all may not know that history behind the sampling. It's pretty much y'all's fault that people have to clear samples and stuff now, right?
I wouldn't say our fault.
Mostly.
I'm going to say
the
label's fault. It's the label's
I like how you
fault.
Put it on it. Okay. It was
but
a label.
You know, it's easy for the label to put it on us.
Right.
It's easy to beat up on the smaller guy than the guy who really got the check. Boom. I hand him the information. It's his job to clear it. If he decides to clear it or not, that puts us both in a compromised situation. And it's easy for him to blame me. Because what do I have to fight?
I like it.
I don't really got much to fight then, but my word. It's my word against his word against mine. And if we want to go in a legal place with it, lie detector, I'm willing to go there with that too, but you know.
Do you think that changed hip hop? Like when, because it seemed like when that popped off, it was already a time, so let's rewind back to like the late 80s and 90s. There were a lot of just crazy court BS happening in hip hop around that time.
Yeah, we had an issue. Biz Markie had an issue.
Biz Markie, remember even Uncle Luke, like Uncle Luke and Two Live Crew.
Censorship issue.
Yep.
He was fighting for freedom of speech.
Right, and won.
And won, so we gotta thank Uncle Luke for what it is still today.
Everyone, make some noise for Uncle Luke. Make some noise for Uncle Luke. Everybody, no, give it up for Uncle Luke.
I mean, you might not
change
want
my
to
life.
Some people might not want to because of the type of entertainment it is and what he brought to the table.
What kind of entertainment was that?
I mean, at the end of the day, he brought adult entertainment.
He did.
You know, it may be disheartening to some people because it did play a part of what we got going on today. That's a little chaotic, you know.
That's a good point.
You know, and I don't want to make it seem like I'm bashing my brothers at all, but there have been some things that have gone on in the development of this culture that people have manipulated to play a part of making money and trying to destroy it at the same time. We completely lost balance. We got no balance. Every once in a blue moon, you'll get a Kanye West or a Game or who am I missing? Kendrick Lamar,
right.
You know, or Anderson .Paak. It's once in a blue, you get that. You're not getting a consistent,
right.
You know, side.
But do you think that that's part of what happens? Because to me, that was a situation where you had entities that didn't necessarily understand the culture, get involved with the culture, try to find ways to capitalize off of it, and in doing so, tainted it.
Oh, they understood it enough to make this money and figure out how to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
Still haven't figured out how to get rid of it because like roaches, we multiply.
Right.
Somehow we prevail, you know.
Right.
We find a good bacteria and we make it happen.
What?
Hey, we all live off good and bad bacteria, so, you know. It is what it is, and for the most part, you know, you definitely had people come in to really try to destroy this thing, and if you can see how it's been designed, I mean, look at the adult entertainment. I never had no problem with the adult entertainment.
Right.
I had a problem with the platform that it's on. It's always been a problem with the platform.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to see my kids watching adult entertainment from the hours of 3 in the afternoon to 9 p.m. when most parents are still at work until what, 9 to 5, right?
I get that, right, I get
you
that,
know?
Yeah.
Then you got BET that's on from 3 to 9 with adult entertainment. And there's so much other things to play other than shaking your tail feather and all other types of stuff that's not permitted for children, you know. Here it is, I'm in the music business, man. I never played BET in my house my whole time catching my kids.
Are you serious?
Never.
Wow.
Maybe the BET Awards, that's about it.
Right.
If anything, I've always kept my kids in some type of outdoor curriculum to keep them, you know, pretty much occupied. because the television had became our babysitter, you know, throughout the 90s, 2000s, and all the entertainment that came across the television throughout the hours of 3 to 9 when kids got home from school, you know, for some parents who worked, you know, that extra shift. Television was the latchkey kid watched television.
That's what they were raised by the television.
Yeah, and he was raised by BET, MTV, VH1. And every last one of the mediums is complicit in what we see today. The FCC decided to deplete certain rules for us to get the content we have now. Once upon a time, you had to have some kind of anti-drug record, social record, love record to even get on radio. Now you don't have to do any of that.
Yeah.
You can really be totally explicit. It's like you have to be explicit to get on radio now.
So, but with that happening, a group like De La Soul, I'll never forget the first time I saw, you know, Me, Myself, and I video. It tripped me out because you guys looked like my cousin, my older cousin, like with the haircuts and everything. So, and then with the roller skate culture and all that. But when you are in an environment, and before I even get into this, I want everyone to understand that a lot of the things that we're talking about don't necessarily just apply to music. A lot of this transcends music. Now, I'm gonna go back to what I was saying. When you're in an environment where everyone is doing this thing, they're creating this music that could be seen as overly sexualized. You know, there was a song I heard on the radio the other day, and I was like, oh my God, I can't, I realized what they were saying, and I just said, what? I can't believe they're playing that on the radio. But the next song was pretty much an offshoot of that same subject. And like you said, there wasn't any love, there weren't any different, you know, conceptual songs. But when you have all that happening, how do you maintain your course and not say, because I've seen a lot of musicians and a lot of artists try to conform based on what everyone else wants, based on what they think the culture wants, based on where they think things, the state of mind is going in. So if that's happening, how do you say, I'm not going to go in that direction, this is who I am, and what kind of thought process goes behind you trying to stay that true to yourself? Is it you consciously staying true to yourself, or is that a level of maturity?
I think it's a combination of both. Because here it is, I can never, ever recreate 3 feet high rising.
Right.
Because that was around the ages of, the development of that was around the ages of 15, 16, 17, you know, for me. And the other guys, a year up, you know, a year or two up.
Yeah.
So that can never be recreated based on adolescence, you know. I'll be 49 this year. I could never recreate those innocence. But for the most part, being conscious of, what would you say now?
Just everything going on, like with everyone, like everyone's creating sex music or violent music. How do you guys stay who you are? Is that, does that come up?
That's natural, honestly. That's truly just natural. Here it is. Just on the strength of the first album, we were being ourselves. We were inspired by so much to be ourselves. Run DMC were themselves.
Yeah.
Cold Crush Brothers were themselves. It was so much power into being yourself and being Black and loving to be Black, even through all the struggles we were even dealing with them times, you know? It was such a consciousness of being happy with who you are, you know? And then what was the main lesson was not to sound like anyone else, to be original. That was the main lesson. Don't try to come out rapping like, I mean, biting was forbidden.
Remember Ghostface and Ray? They scared everybody. Y'all remember that? No one else has, only Bill for Cuban Links, it's just me. Okay, well anyway. You know, I mean, you know what I'm talking about.
Right. Fighting was forbidden, man.
Right.
You know, so it was a certain lessons early on, you know, you were trying to figure out how could you follow this template that was presented to you from the likes of LL, Run DMC, you know, Public Enemy, you know, this template. How do you follow this template and do it your own way? You know, the template of, you know, making the songs, the silly songs amongst your crew that you know we consider the album cuts. And then, you know, the records that you felt you had to make to make some compromise with the company because they're trying to sell this product. So how do you make this so-called commercial record but being honest about it, you know? You tap all into your influences. I mean, Pasha Dave, I hate me, myself, and I to this very day.
Yeah, I've heard that.
I love it. Me and Prince Paul, we love it. Why? I'm a Paul and Funkadelic fan. It's in my blood, it's in my soul. 1976, my very first concert was Paul and Funkadelic at Madison Square Garden with my uncle, my mother, and my little brother, who's to this day will sleep anywhere I need him. That was my influence. That's one of my influences.
You know what's funny about that? Remember I told you I was from Kannapolis? You know that's where George Clinton is from too.
Yeah.
A bunch of crazy people in Kannapolis. This is what we do. You know, now with that being said, do you think that that's lost today? Kind of that whole, I need to be different. I cannot rap like everyone else. I want to rap different. I want to be different. Do you feel that that's gone?
It's been redirected. It's not in music, it's an image.
We talked about this earlier. Yeah.
It's not in music, it's an image. Everybody has this image that they want to more so present than talent. You know, you see what's going on in fashion. You know what I mean? It's a lot of androgynous things going on, you know?
Right.
And here it is.
Method Man's calling.
I mean, there's nothing new under the sun. And you see a lot of certain things coming back, and I see a lot more just put more in image than talent or music. And that's because what that generation has learned from the 2000s. It's that's a video culture.
Yeah.
And everything now is all about visual streaming. Music don't even survive without some kind of visual. You just can't put a song out and expect people just to hear it on the strength of imagination. They gotta see the video first.
But you know what I've noticed though, and this again goes back to what we were talking about. I'm gonna bring you guys to a conversation we had earlier about that narrative. What I'm noticing with the music industry and with musicians, and not even just musicians, I noticed this with actors and actresses, and there's some people I just don't understand why they're famous. Well, I was gonna name Kim Kardashian, but we know why Kim Kardashian is famous.
I can tell you why some people are famous.
We're not gonna talk about
it. You can see it, you know.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. Like, obviously looks are a piece of it, which I feel that's always been a part of that whole, you have an artist and you want to develop this whole package and they need to look a certain way. You know, you can't change your hair needs to be cut like this. But the other thing I'm noticing is, it's really kind of this culture of voyeurism. You know, such and such just got married, or what's the lady's name? Keisha Kior or Dior you know what I'm talking about, with Gucci. Everyone was talking about that and the ring. What music did he drop? People aren't talking about, some people are talking to music, but it's more about that story, that narrative, that image. Do you think that that's crushed music?
I learned this in 1989, probably my first marketing meeting. Sex, simplicity, stupidity, and sensationalism is what sells. That's what sells. And it's a fact. Hashtag fact. Sex, simplicity, stupidity, and sensationalism sells.
What does that say about us? Exactly. You see what I'm saying? You know, that's what, these are the things that are happening in these meetings. It's this whole thing about, you know,
you
want consumer
to know how
behavior.
That happens, you want to know, because I'm an entertainer. People look to be entertained Friday, Saturday night.
When they want to be ignorant.
Because Monday through Friday, they're dealing with a lot of responsibility, a lot of things that got their brain boggling, a lot of intellectual stuff, especially if you have a family, or you have this arduous job, or whatever the challenges are from Monday to Friday. From Friday, when you get off work, every person want to be ignorant as all hell and want to forget about it come Monday. It's water cooler talk come Monday. We whispered, did you see so-and-so with the partner? Ooh, they was ignorant as all hell. Look at them today, they're back on the job. It's people wanting to relieve themselves from all the stuff they've been worrying about all week. And nowadays, when we got this devil in our hand, we're preoccupied. We brought the outside world inside our house, so this is 24/7, on all the time. You hear it going off here, we all victims to this thing right here. So our brain is constantly, our kids especially, this is their world. They know this thing better than us. And their mind is constantly flipping through information. It's like an information war going on all day. They're not stupid.
Right.
They're definitely not stupid. They just do stupid shit.
So, that's the world we're in.
I live with millennials.
That's what we are.
My kids are smart.
They're intelligent. They have more things than we didn't have.
I don't have a college degree. They do.
Right.
They're either getting them or have them. And they do some of the stupidest things on the planet, bro. And it's, a lot of it is by choice. And when people consciously do stupid shit, they don't want smart people to know or want smart people around. They want to be stupid. And that's because of the preoccupation of all of this from Monday to Friday.
But the thing is, we can't go backwards.
No.
This is where we are now, so what do we do with that?
Balance is what I keep coming back to. Yeah. Balance is what I keep coming back to. You know, trying to figure out how to turn this off at some point. You know, let's get back outside, do some recreational stuff. Let's turn this off and really have a real conversation. Barbecue, something. Everybody check your phone at the door. Even when we do studio sessions now, it's like, yo man, turn your phone off so we can lock in right here. It's not about your wife, your kids, your girl back in the day. Come on, man. People used to have a pager.
I remember the
even before that. Even before that, though, you had to kind of wait to get home to find out who was calling you. You know what I mean? I mean, just because somebody texts doesn't mean you have to respond right away. You know?
So
there's a sense of entitlement that came with all of this. Expectations, you know.
Yeah.
Entitlement.
So that immediate gratification, that instant gratification, that's what we are right now. And that's the expectation. So is that the culture? Are we in a culture of immediate, you know, instant gratification?
Instant gratification, short attention span, you know, and people being desensitized.
When you guys went into this last project, I'm sure you guys had a lot of that. You knew that. You knew that that's where we were at.
I mean, totally. Just looking around where you at, where we at, where the culture's at, and then where we stand in it as middle-aged men.
Right.
You know, why is it that this genre is always being condemned to be a young man's sport when every other genre gets to grow and flourish? We get to see, you know, Rolling Stones still kick it at 70 and 80, you know, out there doing their thing.
Right.
Willie Nelson, country music, still doing his thing. We get around to hip hop, I'm like, ain't you guys too old for that? You know?
Knowing all that, having all that information, how does that change the way that you communicate your product?
I think for us, it's just recognizing it. And each album just being who we are, just making the music that we love. I mean, I sit on the end as a fan of music first. Fan of music first. What do I want to hear? What do I like? What do I want to buy? I'm a music lover, you know? I want to make what I feel. I want to make what I would purchase. And my earliest teachings is be comfortable with what you're making, because that's going to be documented forever, you know? And I got to like it before anybody else. If I never sold one record in my life, I want to like this one record that no one else likes. I need to be comfortable with my work. I think that's where a lot of my comrades even fail. When you start to chase a success or chase a hit record or compromising with the label and giving them exactly what they're looking for, you know, you get an understanding of what they're trying to do. If you can get it to work, then so be it. But if you can't get it to work, you gotta do you. You gotta be comfortable with your own work.
Is that the reason why you guys have been able to stay together? Is that same mind state that's shared with the rest of the group? Staying true to yourself and...
Well, that's God, man. I can't really explain that.
Yeah.
You know, it happened the way it happened because that's the way God intended it. You know, we always had a common goal to be a group. No one wanted to have a solo career or anything like that. We've also reaped the benefits of even doing things on our own because we see the design of the business and how we can earn together separately. It's a business, you know? And it's to constantly try to figure out how do you mix creativity with the business without it being much of a conflict or compromise, you know?
It's something that I notice a lot in the startup culture. And that's why it fascinates me, because in the startup culture, a lot of entrepreneurs, they'll start out with a whole group of people. I've seen it a lot of times, especially here in Durham. There'll be a whole group. They'll go off and they'll have this venture, and it'll be an incredible idea. And next thing you know, it's just one, or there's just two. And a lot of times it just dwindles down. Everyone's doing their own thing. A couple of people not working another job. But I just wonder, you know, with you guys, you know, was it just having that common goal, like you said, of I don't want to do a solo record, or I don't want to do a solo record?
I mean, we've been through our ups and downs, man. It ain't been no, you know, fairy tale. We argue, we fight, you know.
So, but what brings you? And I think it's important for people to hear this. Like, the fact that you argue and fight isn't the end all. You all still get back together, you dap each other up. You know,
that's what family's all about. Trying to figure out how you triumph whatever these issues, you know, that we embarked on. And, you know, one thing I could say, you know, we've been blessed. The things I've seen that broke up groups is some of the most gut-wrenching but frivolous. You know, people stealing money, egos definitely clashing. Somebody's thinking they're more than the other, you know. Somebody sleeping with somebody's girl. That's always the deal breaker, you know. It's always a deal breaker.
Well, I got a kind of a fun question. We're getting deep, right? We get really, everybody's just like, yo, this is son, this is crazy. What was it like to work with Dilla? I have to know, dude. I was a dude.
Don't get me crying in here.
Yo, oh, everybody, like, please give it up for James Yancey, please. What was that, a horn?
Hey, man, he made it.
Where did it come from?
That was funny.
I can't with you. How long has it been? How many hours has it been?
It's been going on since we got up.
Since I picked this guy up from the airport, it's just been all kind of rant. All right, anyway. Dilla, what was it like to work with Dilla?
Man, amazing soul, man. Yeah. Amazing brother, man. You know, I mean, words can't explain, man, his talent, his presence was always a shining light. Very quiet, but always was a shining bright light. He, like, he wore that MPC, like, you ever see that that character on Charlie Brown?
Not Linus, what is his name?
Not Linus.
Schroeder?
But the one that played the piano.
Was that Schroeder? Yeah, it was Schroeder, yeah.
The one that played the piano. Yeah. That's how Dylan would be over that NPC.
Oh, wow.
Just like that. And he, I mean, where most of us maybe thought out what we were trying to create or recreate, because the way we made music, especially from you know, utilizing other people's music by sampling, we always looked at it as like making a collage. You know, marrying all these different sounds together, loops, different sounds that you obviously recognize, but how we married them, we made a whole new picture, you know? And every time you either, well, listen to this picture, you hear something unique or different every time, you know? Dylan, based on the machine that we were using, he made us realize they were really instruments, because he played them. While we programmed them, he actually played them. He turned the quantize off and he got on those pads. He put whatever sounds in it that he felt. The way the two inch tape, wow. The way the tape would run back then for musicians to just jam and play, he would do the same thing with that drum machine.
All the way through?
That's what he did. And then we'd go back and then rearrange the parts to make a full sequence, but it would be a jam session with the drum machine, and he would play out of quantize. I mean, Questlove would say Dylan made him a better drummer.
I heard that. Yeah.
So you know, I mean, and on top of that, he was a cool cat, man, cool cat.
So if you guys don't know, one of the things he's talking about is like, when Dylan would make a track, you know, you hear a track like boom, boom, pap, boom, boom, pap. You would hear a song where that snare would not hit in the same place every single time. It felt organic, you know, like someone played it.
And he was.
Yeah.
And he was.
That is amazing. You know, I know we're getting short on time, and I wanted to give the audience...
Like, if you see cats like Stro Elliott...
Oh, you gonna go back to some music, okay.
Stro Elliott, there's a brother named Stro Elliott.
Yeah.
He's really nice playing the...
I've heard of Stro Elliott, yeah.
Go online, on YouTube, type in Stro Elliott and check out that brother on the drum machine.
I'm gonna check him out.
He's highly inspired by Dylan.
I'm gonna check him out.
Highly inspired, and I mean, he plays that drum machine like an instrument.
Dope. So I want to give you guys an opportunity. Does anyone want to ask Maceo some questions? I see some hands up. Let's get a. I can walk to you. Let's do this old school style.
I'm gonna walk.
Hey, so I want to go back to. I have a few questions, but I want to go back to the new age. So it basically is what it is. Kids are in tune. They are, you know, everything is real time right now. How does the group kind of evolve with that? Because it's not going to change. Like, kids nowadays, musicians nowadays, they're not going to go back to the old way. They're not. So how, what mindset are you guys in to kind of tackle the, I didn't even know what this new generation, like I have a 15 and 16 year old son, so I don't even know what their generation is called. But, anyone?
Why?
That's
why.
Does
she ask?
Because it has long time. Anyway, so, yeah, how do we, because I expose them to everything, but how do we, in our generation, kind of evolve to this new generation? Because they're not going to change. We're going to continue to be plugged into everything and get everything real time, and it's just going to go faster and faster and faster until it stops.
Well,
you got that.
This is my opinion, my theory. By traveling so much, by being blessed to travel so much and see how things are much different abroad than they are here with the preservation of culture.
Yeah.
We condemn our culture on all levels, not just music, but even down to the architectural structure. We will tear something down just because it has a negative history behind it, whatever it is. We will get rid of something old for something new. And just because it's new, we praise it. Doesn't mean it's good, just because it's new. Now, to bring it to hip hop, the youngest genre in music, I think is what, coming up on 45 years old this year. Some of us are older than the genre. Now we have grandmothers and grandfathers who grew up on hip hop.
Listening to hip hop still.
Right. What I've been witnessing with hip hop, since I've actually been in it professionally, music industry period, I've watched women in particular denounce hip hop when they reach a certain age, 24, 25, pretty much after their college years. They'll always say, hip hop was something I was into when I was a kid. There's always seemed to be this stigmatism that it's a childhood art form and that you must grow out of it. And that's the thing that has now separated us from the youth, because we condemn the very culture we grew up establishing, being a part of, and actually turned it into one of the number one selling and most profound business in the world. You got people in the business of hip hop that don't even like hip hop.
Yeah.
And along with them, we playing a big part of the destruction of it. We not taking time to even connect with our youth on the hip hop that they growing up listening to, because obviously just like rock and roll, it changed. You know, every genre, blues, some rhythm and blues. It all evolved, it all changed. We looking at our evolution, somewhat of our digression as well. I mean, R&B had its digression, it's disco. Am I? Disco, anybody? It's how we got hip hop. It's truly how we got hip hop, you know? And there was some disco that was really honestly great, in my opinion. You know, high percentage of it, horrible. I think that's kind of what we're dealing with right now in hip hop. You know, we're dealing with a redundancy, we're dealing with very redundant. Mediocrity, we're dealing with everyone sounding the same. There's no originality whatsoever. But that was the turning point with disco. I think we have a turning point with it. I think what we need to do as the generations, from the youth to the elders, we need to connect with our kids and go to some of these concerts together. You like Drake, they like Drake, go to a concert with your kid and hang out. It's something I truly witness when I go overseas and I'm going to these festivals. We are now starting to do festivals in America. We've been doing them slightly, but they're becoming more popular to do and more popular to say. Where instead of going to your local arena, we got big, more outdoor events with the same staging and lighting and all of that. And that has been going on since the beginning of time overseas. So I've been watching people, you know, parents party with their kids and grandkids for the last 30 years going over there. And that's a true, I mean, communication is the best way to preserve culture. Because then there's a respect level, you know, and the kids ain't gonna respect you if you're not really respecting them. That's kind of where we at, especially in this information world. We grew up in a lionized country, you know what I mean? I mean, historically, we are messed up. We just got some things really, because it ain't just on the music, you know, it's on the hip hop, what I would say. It's so beautiful because it's a true reflection of what's going on in the world. No other music will ever present that. It will present every beauty and every ugly of our world. So if there's something in this gun music that you don't like, no, that's because that's what's in our world. That was there before the music. And we gotta figure out how to fix that. You know, a lot of these kids are just straight raw talent. That's not even harnessed at home. I mean, the way the industry is even designed now, A&R doesn't even exist. Artist development does not exist. So it's just a lot of natural world-ass talent that's just going awry, truffle buttering and all types of nonsense. We can do it but not say it. That's what I'm talking about too. You know what I'm saying? We're watching it be done, but we can't say
There's no more nuances.
Yeah.
All right. On that note. You brought this up earlier on the line.
It was disgusting,
wasn't it? So I'm gonna take one more question from the group and then we're gonna wrap it up. You guys, okay, she was really excited. I'm gonna get both of them.
Hey man, I just wanna jump in. Yo, I'm not holier than thou, none of that, you know. I mean, I beat the three strike rule, y'all. I'm blessed.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you so much for being here. I'm gonna change the conversation to more of a technical aspect. You mentioned earlier in the conversation this evening that you said, if you don't know music, if you don't have a technical ear, that you cannot tell if a song was put together in different studios. Do you remember you saying that? Can you give us an example where you've proved yourself wrong, where that a song was put together by Coastally or even by Globally, and not only was it a hit, but it was a classic hit?
Put together in the format of...
You said different forms. You said you can't feel it. They're not in the same
space. You can tell that they're not in the same room.
Yes.
And
is there anything...
I could tell that it's a hit record or a classic.
Is there an example where it proved you wrong that they were in different studios, but you could still feel them?
No.
Okay,
that was a classic. That was a classic before she got on it.
But they did it different time. They did it when he was dead.
Yeah, that's a remake.
And you can still feel.
That's a recover. That's a cover. That's recreating a classic.
I think that actually part of the allure was a fact.
And that's one of the ones that don't count. That's a bad. That's a bad. That don't count. That's in her DNA.
Let me get one more question.
That's like. Well, I have to wait.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You told me your father.
Right, exactly.
That don't count. That don't count.
Can you talk about how localization of hip hop enhances your sound and also your business engine?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
Can you talk about how localization of hip hop enhances your sound and also your business deals?
The globalization of hip hop enhances my sound?
And your business deals.
And my business deals? Well, as far as enhancing my sound, I think behind traveling and touring and getting the experience of being in different types of audience, whether black, white, or someone who don't even speak the language at all, your language at all, and those different experiences definitely help globalize my sound, especially if I'm a repeated offender at some of these places, you know. Business-wise, when you're dealing with shaky record execs and you begin to learn the game they play, you know, you have to study that game so you didn't get lost in the sauce of feeling like you're sandballing out yet for some people who are actually really earning it and they have no talent whatsoever, you know. I'm baking the cake, they just running the bakery. They can't run that bakery without my cake. So I have to begin to start learning the value of my cake. You feel me?
Dang it. I gotta wrap it up. You got one?
Real quick.
Go ahead, hurry up real quick.
You would be one too.
I know. Hello.
Peace.
Peace,
brother.
I'll be seeing you later on and tomorrow.
Cool.
So my question is, do you still eat up El Ketchup for its Tennessee?
I don't eat as much ketchup as I like. Give me high blood pressure. Way too much sodium in that. My old body can't handle what my young body used to handle. So I have to fall back on my ketchup content.
That's
but I love ketchup. Yeah, but it's still the sodium, you know what I mean?
All right, yo, so I do have to wrap it up. We have more programming. So, Maceo, seriously, brother, thank you so much, man.
Hey, bro.
I appreciate it.
We got more to do. We got more to do, man.
So, number one, like I said, thanks to Maceo. Thank you to the Black Wall Street team. Thank you to the Complex Creative team. To WeWork, Frequency 360. Thank you everyone for coming out. In a couple of hours, we will be at Motorco Music Hall. And my good friend here, Maceo, will be spinning.
Yes, I will be playing some music tonight. If y'all want to come by, we'll be
playing. He will be playing.
I'll play about the most classic material. I love DJing, I love playing all my influences, I love watching people dance and have a good time, honestly. So if you feel a little groove in you, got a little icy hot for tomorrow, come with me and have a good time. Also to let y'all know, this year is De La Soul's 30th anniversary. We are working diligently to have the old catalog put up online for streaming, so you can get
your
footprints and stuff. We definitely touring. We actually doing a tour with Wu-Tang and our public enemy called the Gods of Rap tour.
Yes.
As Wu-Tang's 25th anniversary, public enemy's 30th anniversary for Nation of a Million, and our 30th anniversary for 3 Feet High Rise.